I say spillover. What are you saying?
When I think about the word spillover, I think about, let's say, new genetic branch and modification of a path, of an original path, and a translation from something that can be originally confined within the academic realms into other realms, other applications.
Welcome zu einer neuen Folge Spillover. Ich bin Susanne Weckauf und keine Sorge, es wird keine Londoner Folge. Wir sind nach wie vor in Heidelberg, doch heute wird es anders. Mein heutiger Gast, Professor Lorenzo Masia vom Aries Lab der Universität Heidelberg, ist in seiner Fachterminologie im Englischen zu Hause und darum wird diese Folge auch auf Englisch sein. Lorenzo gibt uns Einblicke in die Arbeit in seinem Labor, in dem es um Biorobotics und Medical Technology geht. Glaub mir, es klingt nach Zukunft und das ist es auch. Des Weiteren sprechen wir über den Games Hub, Spillover-Effekte, vor allen Dingen in den Gaming-Bereich und was er als Mentor angehenden WissenschaftlerInnen mit auf den Weg gibt. Viel Spaß beim Zuhören. Spillover. Aus kreativen Ideen wird Zukunft gemacht. We're 1 week after the Games Hub Stabsübergabe. How was the delivery? How was the event?
Oh, the event was very, very nice. I discovered actually a new kind of environment, a new community here in Baden-Württemberg. I was really surprised. I heard that Baden-Württemberg is probably the land that invests most in terms of game design in Germany. There's a concentration of schools and institutions that are really focused on this aspect. And I know also a person that moved from other part of Germany to Baden-Württemberg and from Europe to Baden-Württemberg because the funding system here for game design is extremely high and highly competitive, I would say, but generous. I found a community that is, I would say, different from the community from where I'm from academia, very vibrant, very social, extremely open to experience, let's say, new opinion and different expertises. So something that I found extremely exciting is that this person have the sense of complementarity. Contrary sometimes to academia, that is my environment, but I don't want to talk badly about my environment, but we are sometimes and always too self-referential without looking around and understanding that there are other competences that can be integrated. Under a certain point of view, I understand that is the main structure of academia that doesn't allow other people from, let's say, try to bridge within the research field that are inside the inside the university. I've always been the person that wanted to keep the doors of the lab open to other person with other expertise, even if it's not related particularly to research. There should be intersection, but I am not looking as primary outcome to publishing a journal paper.
Like the spillover effect. Keep the doors open and let's see what happens. Yeah. Let us tell the people, where are you from?
I'm Italian. I'm from Rome.
Nice.
And I was born in Rome. My family is not from Rome, so I'm a first generation. My mother was from Tuscany and my father from Sardinia. But I grew up in Rome. I studied in Rome. And then for my PhD, I just wanted to experience something different. I leave and I spend 2 years at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in the US, in Boston. And that one has been probably, let's say, the experience in my life that really unleashed, I would say, my behavior. Well, because I would say that it's mostly related to the way that certain kind of institution promote competition. Okay, so it's...
throwing you out of your comfort zone.
Absolutely. And the competition is fair. I found a very fair competition. It was not easy at the beginning because, I mean, I arrived, it was a new lab, people highly competitive, but you gain the respect. It's like in sports. There's no way of cheating. I mean, the strongest is the strongest. And there in the group, I mean, the one that were the strongest, they were the one that lead. Yeah. And I still live off that momentum, I would say, from that experience. After almost 20 years, I would say. I mean, I was there in 2005, 2006, so it's almost 20 years, 18 years. I still live off that momentum.
That's a nice essence.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. I would love to talk about that, but I want to tell the people you're a professor for physics, especially biorobotics and medical technology at the University in Heidelberg.
Yeah, I'm affiliated to the Faculty of Physics, although I'm not a physicist.
Okay.
Okay, so and that's why, you know, now the university creates this new Faculty of Engineering. It's called Ingenieurwissenschaften, mm-hmm. in which all the person that are, let's say, coming from different background and mm-hmm. they have a very highly applied research plan converge into this new faculty.
And how did you get this professorship?
Oh, well, you know, basically you look around, there are openings, and of course you apply. If you are selected, you go to the university, you're selected for the last batch of, let's say, candidates, and then you present your ideas, how you intersect with the other person, how you would tailor your research strategic plan respect to the university, and at the end I got the position.
Was Heidelberg your first choice?
Well, for sure, it's a highly competitive university in an extremely competitive country, and I like this. So I would say I'm honored also to work for Germany and sharing my time with a lot of brilliant person. I mean, I have, for example, great intersection and great connection with the industry here in Germany. I found them extremely dynamic, able to risk. Mm-hmm. And of course, I have also several colleagues with whom I share ideas. I just came from lunch with two colleagues sharing, you know, quite cutting edge ideas. Let's see, crazy ideas. For the Carl Zeiss Stiftung, there's this wild card application that we are going to submit. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to tell anything more because I don't want to disclose.
Okay.
It's a very crazy idea, but let's see what happens.
Okay.
Let's cross the fingers.
Fingers crossed. Then tell us about your own lab. You have your own lab.
Okay, my lab is called Aries Lab. That stands for Assistive Robotics and Interactive Exosuits. The Aries basically is an animal. It's my zodiacal sign. It's like, I would say, not particularly clever animal, but very stubborn. That's why I associate this animal to me. Mm-hmm. And the laboratory mainly consists in a very applied research focus. Has this very applied research focus. Mostly we design our own technology mm-hmm. inside, in-house. And the lab's focus, I mean, I have different research streams. I would say I come from rehabilitation engineering or rehabilitation robotics. Then towards over the course of my career, I gradually shifted from a paradigm that was contemplating rigid robotics and classic robotics mm-hmm. into soft wearable robotics that are currently named Exosuit. They are soft exoskeleton.
Can you tell the difference for non-technology people like me and maybe mm-hmm. some listeners?
Well, let's say that rehabilitation engineering and assistive technology is a branch of classic robotics using hard materials like aluminum, steel, electromechanical actuation that are electric motors. Over the course of the year, people realized that this kind of approach was covering only part of rehabilitation engineering, while there were other realms, for example, like ergonomics and wearability, that were not contemplated or were not optimized, I would say. So there was a paradigm shift within the last 10 years of trying to investigate if soft materials like textile, clothing, can be used also for providing people with actuated garments to empower or to provide assistance mm-hmm. in everyday life. It can be walking, it can be feeding ourselves, it can be also, this one for rehabilitation, but it can be also assisting or augmenting in our workplace, increasing safety.
Mm-hmm. And you have three kinds of robotics. You have the exosuits, the wrist robot, and the hand.
I would just divide in two realms: so rigid robotics and soft robotics.
Okay.
At the beginning, when I was still a PhD student and a researcher, I was mostly in rigid robotics. So my first experience was try to build something to restore motor function in hand for people affected by stroke. That one was the specific project that I run at MIT. And basically, I designed this kind of technologies right now quite used in the US. It's commercialized by a company. It was a spin-off from MIT at the time. The company was the Interactive Motion Technology now. It's called Bionic Lab. Has been acquired by a big holding in Canada. Then once I came back to Italy from the United States, I was working at the Italian Institute of Technology. As a mechanical engineer, I wanted to design my own technology, and I tested myself in a designing system for wrist rehabilitation. It's now a spin-off deployed in several clinics. Then gradually I wanted to challenge myself, because after Italy I went to Singapore. I started my academic career as an assistant professor at the Nanyang Technological University of Singapore. And from there, with a group of students, we wanted to challenge ourselves in the soft robotics. And so far we are doing, let's say, decently well.
And your soft robotics is like the exosuits.
The exosuits are basically garments that you can wear. Imagine to wear a jacket. And inside this jacket, there are several sensors that detect your motion. And you have cables, usually artificial tendon that can be done by wire or nylon, that are pulled by electromechanical motors, by electric motors, that are controlled by your motion. So basically, it's an amplification of motion.
Without to be connected with the brain?
No, without.
Okay.
Yeah, without. I mean, you can use different things. You can use biosignal, like the electricity that is fired by the muscles, that is known as electromyography. But you have to place electrodes, of course, on the skin. Or you can use detection of motion by accelerometers, inertial measurement units, and then amplify this motion by, for example, compensating gravity. So this sensor basically detects your motion, understands your configuration, the configuration of your arm or of your legs in a three-dimensional space, and then the electric motors pull this cable in order to provide assistance in parallel to your biomechanics, in parallel to your motion.
Wow.
So you are summing up, basically, the external force of the exosuit to the internal force generated by your muscle.
That's great. And I know a bit how the muscles and the brain works together and functions together. And it has to be really complicated and a lot of work to do such things.
Well, I have a background in neurophysiology and biomechanics. I teach biomechanics, of course. If you want to work in this kind of field, you have to know. Although it's not my field. And I'm not going to talk about brain-machine interface because this is not my field of competence. I'm more the person that envisioned this kind of technology for everyday use. People can speak a lot about rehabilitation. I would say that rehabilitation is just one part of my research, but I mostly see these kind of things for wellness, for example. A bit like the electric bicycle, if we want to make a comparison. The electric bicycle, what it was actually a bicycle actuated that was supporting people pedaling eventually because they were weak or they needed assistance. But now what is an electric bicycle is something that, I mean, in the real extreme application, is something that can increase and augment your capacity of climb and then going downhill. Okay, so I envision exosuits in this kind of way. I imagine someone wearing an exosuit for walking that then can walk more or can run more or can climb higher.
You see it like a wellness product, but it's more a medical product, isn't it? Or
it can be both. I mean, if we go in the range of medical product, of course, the certifications are tighter.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, you have to demonstrate that the system really provides benefits and recovery effects. In wellness, we go into the domain of personal protective equipment and gym and wellness. So the certifications are completely different and the one that you require.
Yeah, I had guests before and they chose the wellness way, when I can say it like that, because it's a bit easier because mm-hmm. of the...
There's also another realm right now that is quite under the spot, is all the part related to industrial protection.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
There are several companies also, companies from Germany here, Otto Bock is one of the example, mm-hmm. or a company like SuitX, Comau, that basically designed this exoskeleton that are passive, are not actuated, so are basically spring-loaded to remove gravity. For people, for example, in logistics that needs to lift several weights, I don't know how many times a day, and we're not talking about huge weights, but still, if you lift a box of 10 kilograms for I don't know how many times during your day, it can be consuming. Mm-hmm. It can incur over the course of the year in what is called low back pain.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, let's say biomechanical damage, and the insurance, and at the end, they needs to pay, of course, the worker because
he's damaged, maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So this is the realm in personal protective mm-hmm. equipment that this kind of science wants to, at one point, meet.
Mm-hmm. Is it on the market? Can people buy it?
Yeah, you can, absolutely. So they're not so cheap, to be honest, I think, and I hope. We're talking about a few thousands of euro.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy this kind of things. They're already used for mostly in logistics, I would say, mm-hmm. automotive,
mm-hmm.
because some of this exoskeleton are designed to allow you to hold your arm over the head for working. Uh-huh. Imagine, you know, in a mm-hmm. production line in automotive,
yes,
that you have to work under the
car,
bridge that is lifted on over your head. These are the major applications, and also for lifting. I mean, I have collaboration also with other companies that design exosuit for lifting. Yeah.
Okay. Before we go further, since when does your lab exist?
I joined Heidelberg University in April 2019. It's not even 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And over these 3 years, I managed as best as I could to hire a competitive person. My environment is quite diverse. I have a gender balance of 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And I never forced it. I think that, you know, brilliant person are everywhere of whatever gender and races. You just have to find and you just have to attract them mm-hmm. and talk to them in the right way.
And how is the diversity in areas where they come from?
Well, different countries, United States, China, Italians, Germans, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Right now are coming also people from India. Yeah.
And their professions? Are they all...
They're all PhD students or mm-hmm. postdocs or master students that they want mm-hmm. to do the thesis with me. The one that are hired, of course, are PhD students and researchers, basically postdoctoral researchers.
Mm-hmm. From what kind of areas or professions?
I would say mostly the background is engineering.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely engineering, because we do a lot of engineering. What kind of engineering? Mechanical engineering, electrical engineering, computer engineering, biomedical engineering.
How big is your team?
It's about 10 people plus, mm-hmm. oscillating, depends, you know. Sometimes people are, they found a job. When they arrive at one moment at the end of their PhD, of course, the PhD must be completed, the path, mm-hmm. so they have the title. But postdocs usually stay with me maximum 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if they find something better before 4 years, I am the first saying, yeah, you have to go.
Mm-hmm.
So my, let's say, final goal is not the one of keeping people close to me such that they can work and I don't. But I believe that the greatest mission is just train them and sending them at the higher level. And so far, I've been quite successful.
Wonderful. And how is your how is Arias part of the university? Are you master students from the University of Heidelberg or?
Most of them are from the University of Heidelberg, but I have a lot of international students that wants to come. I managed to design my own website that is quite, you know, shiny.
I saw it.
and with a lot of videos, so people can download everything from there, publications, read what I do, and if they are interested, open doors. Of course, I mean, we need to understand what kind of background they have, because they always works in teams. This is what I want. No one is just sitting aside and then try to perform a task without succeeding. No, it's very synergistic, I would say.
And how are you integrated in the I say study life of the University of Heidelberg? Do you give lectures?
Oh yeah. When I arrived, basically two professors left, so I was overloaded with seven classes, but wow. I managed to make all of them, and so far I teach seven classes. I completely reorganize a specialization in the Master of Computer Science that is called Biomechanics and Biorobotics.
Wow.
And the seven classes that are taught are, I would say, classic teaching, so robotics, control system design, biomechanics, haptics and human-robot interaction. And then I have other three classes that are practical classes, that are computer games, computer practical, and there's another class that is robotics too.
Wow, your day is longer than 24 hours, I think.
No, I don't think so. I always find the time to go play tennis or riding my motorbike. So, no, it's a matter of being,
Organized.
Yeah, organized. I mean, I managed to prepare all the classes within the first year. I mean, I'm not a young assistant professor, so it means that few classes were already prepared. Some other classes, I tailored them on my research activities. So it was not so difficult.
Do you like it to teach?
Yeah, definitely. It's where you are succeeding attracting the talents. I know that there are, for example, you know, several institutions in which people are happy because they don't teach. But I believe that if you want to keep yourself flexible and train yourself in how to escape certain situation in which worse don't come, teaching is the best gym.
To get inspired also.
Yeah, definitely.
Nice. What field of application do you prove or try out at the moment?
I was very much engaged in all the part related to rehabilitation with my technology. So I basically tested my technology on stroke, clinical rehabilitation after stroke. We are testing devices now in Italy on multiple sclerosis. I have also experience in Parkinson's disease and quite a peculiar experience in cerebral palsy. So basically, you know, neurological damage in children.
And besides the technology, how important is the product design in the development process?
It's just essential. Without it, it never works. No, absolutely. So that's why I collaborate also with TU Dresden. There's a school in industrial design that is quite strong. And I just finished a meeting before coming here. They have brilliant young industrial designer. And we basically designed the technology, developed the technology. In terms of functionalities, it works perfectly, but we need the touch in ergonomics and industrial design to make the system, I would say, also effective, really effective and appealing.
And what other kind of development do you think is possible in the future?
That's a huge question. So hard to reply. I would say that I am very much, you know, a mechanical engineer by training, but there are right now all the parts related in biomaterial biocompatibility that are coming up. And I would say that now we talk about robotics, but if we really want to become, how to say, symbiotic with the human, with our technology. We should just have a transition towards bionics. And there are few persons, but very few, that are trying to do this kind of things. In the United States, Hugh Geher from MIT is one of the pioneers. So really going, I don't want to say with a more invasive technology, mm-hmm. but there's still this gap between robotics, wearable, soft, rigid, whatever it is, and the human biomechanics that we still don't understand. Mm-hmm. Smart materials, biocompatible materials, they play the role of the middle layer of the interface mm-hmm. between something that is completely artificial and something that is biological, that it's us.
What do you think we need for that?
Time. That's the main, there are time and interdisciplinarity, I would say. And sometimes interdisciplinarity is very difficult. I would say that, you know, in the Games Hub, I found this kind of attitude. So a sort of being completely open towards multidisciplinarity, experiencing also and testing if new science or before science that were thought to be parallel without never focusing into a focal point can be, let's say, used to fill some gaps mm-hmm. that we all have. I have gaps in my technology. And definitely the people in game design can fill this gap.
And you're feeling it kind of right now, because speaking of the Games Hub, you have a bigger team and it's more experts from different areas.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not that we are coming from a field that ignore completely how to design a game. So that's something that, you know, this substrate of compatibility should exist. We know how to design a game, but the game that we design are usually games that are that they have one prime purpose, the one of extracting data mm-hmm. and understanding if our technology is effective. I give you a practical example. If I use an exosuit on a treadmill mm-hmm. to understand if the walking is really assisted, I usually provide a virtual environment of a forest. Okay, so this forest probably has not even a bird. The path is like straight and probably gray. It looks like more a
like
road.
Like the Game Boy games.
Well, Game Boy, basically, they were super pioneers. The one that they designed the Game Boy, even worse.
Oh, okay.
So the idea is just emerging other expertise in order to have something that can embrace multiple realms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and at the end, what is the purpose? Is creating something more complex.
Mm-hmm.
However, yet this, let's say, entire product should be something modular.
Mm-hmm.
There should be the virtual reality that can work by itself, as well as the exosuit that can work by itself. And then if they put together, you reach between the let's say, the fusion between these two core technologies.
Is that
obtaining something completely new?
That's kind of closing the gap you speak before.
It's exactly what I was speaking before. Yeah.
So maybe we didn't realize that it's very important not only to see some trees in the forest, but maybe smell them or hear the forest, to have the whole forest close up.
But this is, in fact, the path that we are trying to take, because this Games Hub came from an idea, from a brainstorm
mm-hmm.
with Delta Sound, that is a young startup.
I know. Anna Monte and Daniel Deboy, they mm-hmm. were my guests.
Okay. So that's quite a bright minds. And the idea was interfacing this very simple virtual reality that we had with 3D
mm-hmm.
Stereo sound for giving a, let's say, a more immersive experience.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then, of course, with the game app, why we applied? Because we are looking for someone that can be also game designer. Mm-hmm. They can write a script. They can take care about the virtual reality. They can take care about the artificial intelligence. And then we try to integrate everything with the 3D sound, with the exosuit, in order to create a fully immersive experience.
And for that, you have the 3D artists from the Hochschule der Medien.
Yes. Anne-Sophie. Anne-Sophie, sorry.
Okay, and how did you all find together in this interdisciplinary team?
Oh, well, it's just fishing back and forth. It's not that you have to wait. I mean, there are several things that can be useful. Not only the... I mean, I found extremely useful Xing, mm-hmm. LinkedIn, mm-hmm. and stop. Nothing else. But however, still, it's... And then, of course, navigating, you know. The web is like... it's something that give you access to people that before you would have never met.
And especially in this team, I think you had the matching meeting, when I call it, like, I think it's a matching meeting, with the Games Hub.
Well, basically, it was an idea of the Delta Sound to apply to the Games Hub, because I was completely not aware of the existence of the community.
Ah, okay.
Yes, my fault, honestly. But, I am brand new in Germany, so I don't know how it works, especially. I mean, for example, in Italy, the game community, I mean, we are not a country in which game design is one of the main. We are more into engines and motorbikes and cars and other things, and of course other realms. Mm-hmm. But it was their own idea. And then we figured out to put together our proposal and discuss our proposal in front of the search committee, the mm-hmm. review panel.
Okay, mm-hmm. Let me say something about the Games Hub. It was founded in July 2021, and more information about the Games Hub and the founders and its partners will come at the end of this episode, if you need to know more and if you want to know more. With all those experts from your teams, all the Delta Soundworks, Anand Daniel and Anne-Sophie Breininger, the 3D artists from the Hochschule der Medien, how, or would you say the way of success kind of started in the application process?
So, I mean, I would like to, let's say, promote a new paradigm shift, mm-hmm. in the sense that I don't want to stitch too much inside the academia. Mm-hmm. Now the rector will hear and will fire me. And no, but I would like really to create, let's say, an environment in the laboratories and in the facilities that I started so far about 3 years ago, mm-hmm. where really people comes, discuss, if there's something that we can do, we do it together, and then we exploit. Mm-hmm. We exploit just writing application, applying for funds, applying for patents. I would absolutely love to interact with the Hochschule der Medien, SRH, mm-hmm. and... you know, taking these institutions to talk to me, visit my lab, discuss if they want, I can just also provide seminars with their students, try to involve their students also in my class, in my research activity. If they find that my research activities are something that can complement their already existing activities, because here we are talking about complementarity. Mm-hmm. This is something that I would like to investigate. This is something that I would like to ignite, I would say.
But the possibility in the Games Hub for Health and Science, mm-hmm. Heidelberg, it's given by them.
It's absolutely given. Now we need to build up more. We need, of course, to apply for funds. I would mm-hmm. like, basically, you know, because, I mean, it's fine opening the door of the lab, but mm-hmm. I would like to pay people. Mm-hmm. Because here we are talking about professionals. We are not talking about children that they have to go to the park and play. Mm-hmm. So here we are talking about people that they should be initiated to the working environment, because my laboratory is absolutely a working environment and these people must be paid. So, of course, I mean, on my side, all the burden of finding the resources to ignite this new, let's say, strategic alliance with the Games Hub and my institution, and try to propose something that is completely new also at the national level. Mm-hmm. Because so far, I don't know many people working in my field and not many people that want to merge this kind of fields between game design and exosuit or assistive or wearable assistive technology.
So you're kind of a pioneer.
Well, I mean, this is I take it as a compliment, but I don't have this opinion of myself. Mm-hmm. I would say that I'm an explorer.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
So okay.
I'm not like the one that failed going on the South Pole, probably. But let's be a bit more conservative and keep everything under control. I would like to propose something new.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I'm not a follower, I would say.
No, you're an IRIS.
Let's say, perhaps.
Push open new ways.
You're too charming.
You don't. So do you have a concrete problem you want to solve with the Games Hub? Besides open new doors and work with different people?
Well, the word problems denotes something negative to me. I would say, are there doors that I want to open?
Mm-hmm.
I would say yes.
Implementing something new.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm interested, for example, in all the part related to gaming. That, in my opinion, is one of the field in which the competence in artificial intelligence, virtual reality, graphic engine, dynamic engine, whatever you want, are most concentrated. You will not find these competences in the universities. I'm sorry to say, very few person are able to have the same level of complexity that is in game design.
Mm-hmm.
For any aspects, also the artistic aspects, because, you know, there's an artistic aspect that is absolutely outstanding. And, you know, the imagination, the creativity that is in the game design is, you know, by far exceeds the one that is in academia. And I'm sorry to tell this because I'm in academia, but I don't care. I'm telling you this as an ex-addicted gamer, of course.
Really?
Because, of course, I wasted myself, you know, in front of PlayStation 1. I can tell you a story.
I thought Italians aren't that big in gaming.
In game design, but in gaming, we are quite addicted. So I can tell you a story. So when I... of course, I was born in the era of Commodore 64.
Okay.
I am from the 1977. So the first personal computer, Commodore 64, for families arrived in the early 80s. And of course, I was born. I had my Commodore 64. And there you have to program something in basics, you know. And then I remember you have this cassette that you have to stitch inside the recorder and press play on tape. It was this command. It was load and then enter and then press play on tape written on the screen. And you press play on tape and you start and you wait for the cassette going ahead. And then at the end, it was supposed to stop, for example, at 100 rounds. It goes 110. You have to rewind and try to load again. Amiga 500, then there was the PlayStation. And when the PlayStation arrived, that one was basically my biggest desire. How it worked? Well, the PlayStation cost a lot. So at that time, internet was not very much diffused. But if you take the newspaper, there were the announcement, I'm selling a PlayStation, this is the price. And there was a guy, I'm selling the PlayStation in Rome, because I, by mistake, bought it too. I don't know.
How. Okay.
See, I mean, he ordered this
that
PlayStation.
That happens.
So he was selling really for a very low price at that time. And then I called him by phone. I said, hey, where are you? It was on the other side of Rome. I took my scooter, red lights, green lights, orange, who cares? I arrived for first and I bought my PlayStation. And I brought it home. And since I know that my mother was not very much into these things, my PlayStation was hidden inside my closet, and at night, around 2, I just woke up and played the PlayStation. So, I mean, I can tell you, you know, so many anecdotes about PlayStation and gaming, but I was really, really addicted.
How
I also
old were
made
you
tournament.
Back then? Huh? How old were you back then?
Oh, now they're young.
I have no idea when the PlayStation came out in Germany.
In the 90s.
I was younger than 19 then, but yeah. Wow. Is that where the passion started?
Well, there's always been this passion for gaming. I mean, since the Commodore 64. Absolutely.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's something, it's part of my life. It's not something, you know. And I've always seen as something absolutely healthy, social. If you abuse, of course, it can be detrimental. But tell me something that if you abuse of this something, it's not detrimental for you. Everything. Also water.
Yeah, true. Do you play today? Or only in your profession?
No, today,
kind of
today a bit. No, today almost nothing. I mean, I say that I was an addicted gamer.
But
until I'm not kidding. Until 3 years ago, probably. Yeah, with my PlayStation 4.
I think a lot of people are.
No, definitely. I mean, I used to organize in my apartment this tournament with my students. Oh yeah, yeah, Super Evolution Soccer.
Yeah, okay.
They still remember how much I spanked them.
I think you are their favorite professor.
Well, I mean, that's not, now let's not exaggerate for sure. But I can kick them also, you know, in real sports. So not only in steel.
Yeah.
Steel, I would say. Let's see in about 2 or 3 years if I will still keep, you know, my physical performance. Well, biology says no, but let's see.
Okay. Back to the Games Hub.
Mm-hmm.
What are your expectations?
Startup.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely.
A new one.
Yeah.
Interdisciplinary startup.
An interdisciplinary startup that's, you know, usually, I mean, I've seen many startups that flourish. Usually a startup rotates around a patent that is licensed,
mm-hmm.
Okay, a proprietary technology. I believe in my lab there are several aspects that can be really, really exploited. We have a range of exosuit that is quite wide. We cover both upper limb and lower limb. If we manage to get the right team and design something fancy,
mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure that there's space also for investment. And then at that point, I would have done my mission because I create basically, you know, working places for people that work with me or people coming from outside. This is, you know, the real translational experience that the university and academia should have.
Mm-hmm. It's for me kind of the best explanation for the spillover.
Yeah, it's the final goal, I believe.
Yeah.
It's the final goal.
Something fancy.
Something fancy.
Yeah, to invent something fancy.
Well, I want that, for example, I don't know, a person wake up in the morning, have a shower, and then I say, okay, I take my exosuit and instead of my bicycle, and I run to my office.
Uh-huh.
And I can work also with my exosuit, or I can play game, maybe online. It can record what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
It can basically tell me if I'm improving or not. It can challenge me, and it can adapt. And from here, the topic of the artificial intelligence. In a world in which right now coding and artificial intelligence is probably the main topic, because I am artificial deficient, in the sense that these people actually put you on the table that with artificial intelligence or machine learning, they can do everything. In my science, is an upper layer. It's not the working principle. So this means that the system that I design, they work with classic controls or codes that are tailored depending on the system.
Mm-hmm.
And the artificial intelligence should be the intelligence on top,
mm-hmm.
that modulates and shapes the control that is at the lower level, depending on how the system interacts with the person. Right now, when you wear a system and you want to change how the system behaves, you have to change the code. You have to tune
mm-hmm.
the controller. The artificial intelligence on top should be something that gives an adaptability
mm-hmm.
to the system itself.
Mm-hmm.
It can increase the assistance, decrease the assistance. It can, for example, if we have, let me say something, you know, a bit sci-fi. Let's suppose that I have materials that are able to change their structure and they're worn. They can change the structure depending if you want a closer fit, a tighter fit, or let's say a better ergonomics, or I don't know, if you want to run and not walking, you want an exosuit that basically really perform in such a way to be well fitted. I mean, we don't actually wear very large pants or trousers when we run, no? We have this elastic tight pants. Well, you can imagine that the exosuit will be able to change the shape to improve the ergonomics, to set up itself depending on the mode in which you switch. Okay, you have to run because, I don't know,
you want to get the train.
Or mountain lion is running after you. That your heart rate will increase, your adrenaline will actually pump in your into your bloodstream. The exosuit will understand and will put maximum boost.
It's so fascinating. I could listen to you the whole day. It's like, oh no, I have to ask questions. No, no, I really, it's very interesting, and I really like the way of thinking.
Well, it should be a bit more, I would say, on the fun side, rather than this, we are gonna find the cure of cancer. It's very important. I lost my mother for cancer, whatever it is, but I'm not this kind of person.
I know, so. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so I'm more the one we need to breach.
And we need to have, maybe it's fun, maybe it's positivity, I'm not sure how to call it, but it's kind of an essence. If you don't have that, for me, or in my opinion, your kind of motivation is, yeah, it's not there if you don't have
Well, did you see the picture from my lab?
Yeah.
And there are all people smiling?
Yes.
This is exactly how it is. Yeah. Okay. Oh, of course, it's not that I never fired anyone, huh? I did.
That to be happy and to smile doesn't mean you don't have to fire someone.
No, I mean, let's say that what I really want is an environment in which people compete, but see competition as a personal path towards an evolution of their personality and an improvement of their maturity. Okay, so they need to understand that when there is someone that is better, this person must be followed. I am in this kind of person. I am this kind of, I have this kind of vision. When I found someone that is better than me, I followed. And I was never the first in my class. That's the thing.
Short break for that, because it's important.
Yeah, that whatever.
Okay, whatever. Yes. And I think some people aren't made for that, or they don't choose it, or they don't want it. And in my opinion, it's okay. But then maybe you have to go separate ways.
Yeah, the important, I think that, let's say, as mentor, professor, whatever it is, we have the responsibility of driving people towards the best path that they can take. And sometimes you need to have the responsibility of talking clearly to this person, giving them the room to take the decision. However, a decision should be taken. If there are persons that are not cut for research, or for example, they don't like writing, in research, writing is probably 80%. I'm always writing. If you don't like writing, if you don't like communicating, if you don't like telling the story, because actually, when you write a paper for a scientific journal, I always tell to people, try to write a bit something that appeal the person, that arouse the interest. Tell a story in a sci-fi way, of course, without overshooting, otherwise, you know, it's ridiculous. I mean, we are always talking about science, and at the end, the results should be there. But you have to train person in presenting themselves. That's why I am completely addicted to demos. This means that if I have a guest, that comes visiting my lab, all the team should be ready within, really, I'm not kidding, 2 minutes in showing how a system works. I went many times into labs and they say, we do this, we do this, we do this. But then I never seen them working. Mm-hmm. And every time a company talks to me and they ask, can you provide us some proofs? I provide them videos. And then I ask them, if you want to compare, just see and ask videos to other people. In my lab, every time that a person was hosted, he attended real life demos and can also try the systems. So there's no lie. Mm-hmm. The system works. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. Mm-hmm. And we say, well, you know, it doesn't work well. Okay, so you must be crystal clear and show really what you do. If it doesn't work, you can be ready to say, well, you know, we mm-hmm. tried to go in that direction, but it didn't work, or we were not able. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So demos, the importance of showing the work, of divulgation, presentation, I'm completely fond of these things. I mean, of course, I was trained in the US where they put particular attention in presentation of the work, of the personality, very much, sometimes a bit too much. Mm-hmm. However, I much prefer someone that is able to show off, let's say, mm-hmm. rather than someone that is extremely shy, but is not able to communicate or doesn't or believes that presentation of what he or she does is not a central core. Mm-hmm.
Is there something you could tell maybe students, postdocs, or maybe people who wants to get in this business, how or what you, a tip, something?
Mm-hmm. Well, the first tip is information should be readily extractable. Mm-hmm. Single statement, short statement, images. I take a very strong, a very really high attention to presentations of figures, photography, mm-hmm. Movies also. I mean, my website is full of, you know, actually movies from my technology and the technology that with my team we designed together. Mm-hmm. This is, you know, the visual information is the one probably that is the most extractable and the easiest to extract. Then there's also the olfactory, but that one, you know, I don't know how to just communicate science with, I mean, that one is mostly related to memory, but I mean, visually speaking is the first information that you extract.
Because humans are eye animals.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Well, humans, the other one, no, they actually, the olfactive information for animals is more important.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted.
No worries. But anyway, so presentation, just to summarize this, not presentation, I mean, the way of communicating with people is very much, in my opinion, the most important things. And it should be done not being too technical, mm-hmm. okay? But being able to go into technicalities, because I'm very much someone that, if I am asked, what is my research, I can go really in details. I know exactly how it works. On the other side, I am not a fan of person that wants to simplify science to make people understand. No. Mm-hmm. You must communicate to the world what you are doing, but you must also communicate that what I am doing is because I studied an entire life. And this is true for research, it is true for any kind of professionality in the world. Let's not simplify. We live in a society in which everything is simplified. It's, you know, full of Wikipedia person. Mm-hmm. And this should not go in this direction.
But isn't it important to explain maybe some people who wearing the exosuits and there are no trained or they have no idea from what you're doing.
It's absolutely important. It's absolutely important. But for example, something that I don't like is that many people use science and apply science to domains that are not scientific at all.
Yeah.
Advertising yourself doesn't mean simplifying what you do for spreading out to the majority or as max as possible in all the direction and just having more lights on you. Because you incur in the mistake of simplifying what you are doing, and then you are prone also to critics. You must be ready to be prone also to critics from people that eventually are not from the field, but they feel themselves justified in just saying what is wrong or what it doesn't work. So there are two big mistakes. Sometimes people are too self-referential and enclosed in their enclave. So this is science. We should not communicate that because this is something that we actually manage. And the one that really spread out, you know, in this without discriminating everything. No. So you should be in the right, let's say, lane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Some short questions. Research or practical experience?
I would say these are two different stages of life. Which between the two should be done first, I'm not sure. It depends mostly on the person. However, for a person like me that comes from mechanical engineering, I believe that practicality, manual skills, experience on the field is something that is paramount. For my, let's say, research. For other research, people that works in computational mechanics and other things, no. But you need to have an extremely applied mind to understand how to predict what will happen physically to take the right path in science. Sometimes science, there are several domains that are really, they never touch the practical life. I totally respect them. It's just not my call.
Science or economy?
Well, economy itself is a science. If you want to predict, for example, the market that unfortunately drive our everyday life, you need to be a scientist, I would say. Probably the dualism is money or not money, because the economy. So who works, for example, in econometry is by far someone that probably is inserted in also certain kind of responsibility that are different from science. Science, we have the freedom of taking the path that we want. We can be more or less successful, but if we fail, it's on our shoulder.
And you're kind of in between?
Me?
Or on both?
I'm a scientist. Full stop.
And how do you earn money with the exosuits, for example?
Well, I'm not earning money with the exosuit. An academic professor, and what I do, I train people. Then if they want to go into industry, they can go. I think I gave the person in my labs always notions and practical capacities. They were able, and some of them they did, they were able to go and work for corporates, for industries, just in research and development or production, absolutely.
Why is it nothing for you, or why is it not your way?
No, it is my way, to be honest, because I am quite skilled, for example, in mechanical design, assembly. I have this capacity. I still design with my team, propose solutions. I would say that, you know, big part of the solutions also that are in my lab comes from me. I'm not the one that just says, hey, you have to do an exosuit. No. I have, you know, a lot of experience. Why not me? To be honest, if a company comes to me and says, we need you in research and development or for design of certain aspects of our products, I will jump. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I'm not sure academia will be the place where I will die, you know?
But you would still say you're a scientist.
I would say I'm an inventor more than a scientist, mm-hmm. because I have demonstrated that I was able to create the instruments by my own. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is exactly the philosophy that we have in the lab. We design our own proprietary technology, mm-hmm. we design our own code, and we test. Mm-hmm. So this conception, design, and development, I would say.
All under one roof.
Yeah.
If we could have a look in a crystal ball, what are your dreams and your goals, or what do you want to achieve in the future? Or you go with the flow?
No, I'm not going with the flow at all, to be honest.
I didn't.
If you look my personal life, I don't say.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No, definitely. It's a hard question. I would like to have my own company, I would say. Yes. Mm-hmm. I would like to exploit what I have done so far in research and having a group of team that look forward to jump into the working place in the morning, spending time together, and then going outside for dinner. This is exactly actually what is happening in my lab, because I mean, I hang out with students. They invite me for dinner. They know that sometimes, you know, I arrive quite early in the morning, and usually I go home quite late. But this is the price that the leader has to pay, because you have to arrive for first and going for last. Mm-hmm. So I would like to have my team, having my own company, try to spin off, you know, an entire lab. And also, you know, at one point, why not? Challenging myself on a different ground that is not academia. So far, I have demonstrated to be decently successful, I would say. Mm-hmm. I was, you know, I arrived here in Heidelberg, I was early 40. So far, so good. But I want more. I mean, I'm always unsatisfied. Like my partner always used to say, you're never happy. I say, well, you know, it's the price that you have to pay with the ambition. You know. It's not easy living with someone that's never happy or always unsatisfied. However, at least you don't live with someone that sits.
It's your intrinsic motivation.
Mm-hmm.
Did the pandemic situation have any effect on your work or?
Zero.
Okay.
Zero. I just wrote an email to the university. I'm going to come. If you don't want me, at the university, just send the polizei. No, me and my team were able to stay in the lab, mm-hmm. for all the pandemic. We self-test each other. Mm-hmm. We have a chat. If there's someone with symptoms, stay home, check yourself. And it worked perfectly.
Yeah.
So we were not stopped. And we published extensively. Mm-hmm. We reached quite good results. The lab expands. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. It was the pity, you know, that I was not able to do classes in person with the students. Yeah. But this is more for the students, and because, you know, it's important during the university just coming into class, interacting with the professor. I'm quite an interactive person. I'm not the professor that just, you know, talk and doesn't want a question. And then, you know, it's important also because it creates the stamina of a person. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not good being on the sofa and just watching the recorded class. You have to wake up in the morning early. When I was at the university, I was also queuing a lot because the first 2 years was, in principle, a real natural selection. I was the first entering the class, you know, and just taking the first spot in front of the professor for me and my mates, and then interacting, of course, and then having all the part of the social life that is, in my opinion, and I have And I believe that is one of the best part of the university studies of a person's life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have fantastic memories. It was hard.
For sure.
But it's okay. I
mean. I'm sure we could talk more and more, but is there something I didn't ask or you want to say? Maybe at the end you could sum up, where do you see the spillover effect of your work?
But for me, the most important aspect of the spillover effect is creating multiple chances for the person that will interact with me. This means that if scientifically speaking, I have the vision that the Games Hub for sure will provide complementarities, ideas, new pathways for the intuition from me or from my team. The most important aspect is that at the end of the path, the person that have worked with me will be able to have in front of them a range of possibilities that will be offered not only by academia, but also from other mm-hmm. domains. I never found myself in the situation of telling someone, sorry, I cannot renew your contract because I'm running out of money. Persons were able to just to find, and I have to say that I played fundamental roles in this, motivating the person or also simply raising the phone, taking the phone and calling someone. And I was successful in this because at the end of their contract or before the end of their contract, they were employed at the higher level also. This is the idea. Mm-hmm. That's why, for example, I had brilliant students with me, PhD. They would have minded to stay more. That's the time that you just skip at the higher level. And they went to Harvard, to ETH Zurich, to MathWorks, to Microsoft. So this is for me, you know, something that really, that I like showing off. So this is the real target. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So this is for me the spillover. Then scientifically speaking, I have no doubts that we will be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's more in the creation of the range of possibilities that people coming out from a lab will have.
Hmm? I have nothing to add. Thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure, and thanks a lot for this opportunity.
Ich hoffe, ihr habt einiges mitgenommen. Und wie bereits in der Aufnahme erwähnt, nochmal die Informationen für den Games Hub für Health und Life Science Heidelberg. Dieser wurde im Juli 2021 eröffnet. Projektverantwortliche sind die MFG Baden-Württemberg in enger Kooperation mit der Stadt Heidelberg, Stabsstelle Kultur und Kreativwirtschaft, dem Technologiepark Heidelberg, dem Life Science Accelerator, der Universität Heidelberg, der SRH Hochschule Heidelberg, dem Heidelberg Startup Partners e.V. und der Hochschule der Medien Stuttgart. Das interdisziplinäre Kooperationsprojekt wird vom Ministerium für Wissenschaft, Forschung und Kunst Baden-Württemberg gefördert. Wenn ihr euch für die Arbeit von Lorenzo Marcia interessiert, dann klickt euch einfach mal auf seine Seite. Infos dazu findet ihr in den Shownotes. Und wenn euch der Podcast gefallen hat, abonniert ihn gerne beim Anbieter eures Vertrauens. Wir freuen uns auch immer über Feedback. Die Infos zum Kontakt findet ihr auch in den Shownotes.